Well, I'll call your attention to the Old Testament. Now, I knew by the title of the message that I mentioned this morning, Our Adversary the Devil, I knew that many of you were going to think I'm in 1 Peter. But I'm not. I'm throwing you a curveball tonight. We're going to see some things about our adversary the devil this evening, how it all began. You say, well, why aren't you using 1 Peter? Because I may come back to that in the next few weeks. This may be a theme for a little bit. This is not the type of subject that you can deal with in one, I was going to say 30-minute message, but I don't have those. In one message and in one service, all right? So anyway, we're going to look at a kind of an obscure passage of Scripture tonight. And you'll find it in the book of Ezekiel. Now, Ezekiel is one of the major prophets because of the size of his book. We're going to be kind of like in the middle of it. I want you to make no misunderstanding in your own mind about this. The devil is our adversary. He is alive and well, as Hal Lindsey wrote back in the 70s, he is alive and well on planet Earth. And he has done nothing but increase his efforts since then. Now, I know that he's been in the latter days, which began way back in the book of Acts. I understand that. But I'm telling you, as his days get shorter, it seems like his activities get greater. And much like I preached about today, there's going to be those fallen angels that are going to be released from the Euphrates, and there's going to be a demonic horde that comes along 200 million strong. Well, there's a bunch of them out there right now before the 200 million strong get in gear. And so we're going to look at his beginning tonight. Now, Ezekiel 25 through 32, this is a portion of Ezekiel where he is talking about the judgments that are going to be falling on various groups. But when you come to chapter 28, he narrows it down to an area that is north. In biblical geography, it would have been called biblical Syria, but in our time today, it is Lebanon. Up on the coast of the Mediterranean, up above Israel, is the country of Lebanon. There is an area up there called Tyre and Sidon. And up there, you have just a remnant of what it was when Ezekiel was writing. It is nothing like it used to be. It used to be an economic powerhouse. It was a place where ships from all across the Mediterranean would come in and dock there in the port of Tyre. Literally, they were making money by the boatloads. All right? It was one of the most wealthy areas in ancient times. You remember during the time of Solomon. Now, Ezekiel was well after Solomon. But you remember the time of Solomon when he was building that temple. There was Hiram, who was the king of Tyre up in Lebanon, and he was sending cedars down the Mediterranean coastline. They were floating them down that coastline and taking them out at a place called Joppa, where Jonah got on a boat. They brought it out there, but those huge cedars of Lebanon came from up north near Tyre. That's where they came from. And so they are going to now be judged, and we're not going to deal with verse 1 through 10, but I just want you to see why God judged them. Verse number 6 says, because they had set their heart against the Lord. They thought themselves to be God. They said, hey, as much as we've got, Man, we have basically turned ourselves into our own authority. We have turned ourselves into our own God. Who needs any God? We are gods. That was their attitude. When you keep reading, it talks about how that he's going to bring strangers upon thee. They were so powerful economically, and the geographical location that they had was very, very advantageous for like attacks if somebody was going to try to attack them. They thought they had it all going on. But because of their pride, God said that I'm going to bring strangers upon thee, the terrible of the nations. They will draw their swords against the beauty of thy wisdom, and they shall defile thy brightness. In other words, everybody was oohing and aahing about how wonderful Tyre was. And God said, because of your sin, I will cause you to go down. Your brightness is going to be gone. You'll be nothing but a memory. And if you go to Tyre today, it's basically a shell of what it used to be during these biblical times. Verse 10 says, thou shalt die the deaths of the uncircumcised by the hand of strangers. And so you see that Tyre is the one that's in play. But there's something that takes place in verse number 11 through verse 17. And that's where we're going to kind of focus tonight. In verse 11 through 17, we're not talking about all of the nations in that big number of chapters, 25 to 32. We're not talking about just Tyre in verses 1 through 10 of chapter 28. What we're talking about now is we're talking about the one behind the scenes of Tyre. The one that is actually controlling the king of Tyre. And so I want us to think about that this evening. And I want us to think about Lucifer's beginnings. And so we're just going to kind of just wade through these verses. And verse number 11 simply says this, moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyre, and say unto him. Now, the description that you are about to read, it is the reason that most Bible scholars and commentators understand that this description cannot be applied to the actual king of Tyre. And so there is kind of a change between 1 through 10 and now 11 through 17. And he says, say unto him, the king of Tyre, thus saith the Lord God, thou sealest up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. So I want you to just think about that for a moment. An earthly king could never be, you know, full of complete wisdom, which is what this is a reference to. He is certainly not perfect in beauty. You have this being that is now behind the throne of the king of Tyre. And so I want you to see just maybe 6-7 things tonight. Number one, I want you to understand that Satan, Lucifer, the devil, our adversary, a lot of different names that the Bible gives us concerning Satan. I may give you a list of those names in a week or two. I have a book that was written by a man named Mark G. Cameron. Dr. Cameron was a professor at Florida Bible College way back in the 60s and 70s. Brilliant, brilliant man. He's dead and in heaven now. But I picked up a little book that he wrote eons ago, and I think I still have that. It is the best book that I think I have ever seen as far as the names of Satan and the Antichrist. And so I may drop that on you in the next week or two. And so I want you to understand this, that Satan is not like God. He is a created being. Now, that is a big, big, important thing for you to always understand. Satan is created, God is not. God had no beginning. Do you remember when he was talking to Moses? And Moses said, well, who am I supposed to tell Pharaoh sent me? And what did God say? Tell him, I am sent you. You have God that is eternal. Now, when you think about it logically, it has to be that way. There is nothing that you and I look at that did not have a beginning. You yourself had a beginning. You were conceived of your parents. You gestated and you grew. But ultimately, you were created. And when you were conceived, God gave you a soul. Now, I had somebody ask me one time, do you think that there's a storehouse of souls where God just takes them and throws them into the baby's body? No. I don't think that there's a bunch of them up there and go, well, that one looks like that'll fit. No, I think that everyone that is born, God has a unique prescription about them. And it's not just DNA. I think that they are unique by the act of God's creation. And so you have everything has a beginning, but yet logically there's got to be something that did not have a beginning, or else how would anything start? There has to be something that is eternal, and the Bible reveals that to us, that it is God. Satan is not eternal. He is a created being. Now, there are cults. And what do they try to do? They try to tell us that Jesus was a created being. The Mormons tell us that. Jehovah's Witnesses tell us that. That is a big, big tenet in both of their doctrinal statements, that Jesus was created. No, Jesus always was. Now, he incarnated so that he could live a life, die on a cross, be our sacrifice, and save us. But let me tell you something. Jesus has been around, not by the name Jesus, but by the Son. He has been around just as long as the Father has been around, just as long as the Spirit's been around. Satan, not so. I want you to look with me at verse 13. He says, toward the end of it, and of thy pipes was created in the day that thou wast created. The verse closes with that word, created. Look at verse 15. Thou wast perfect in the ways from the day that thou wast created. And so Satan was not always in existence. He did not have an eternal attribute. He was made just as the other angels were made. He was made just as this earthly creation was made. He was made just as the planets and the stars in the heavenlies were made. He is a created being. Now go back to verse number 12 and you will find that he is the wisest of those creations. Verse number 12. Son of man, take up a lamentation against the king of Tyre, saying to him, thou saith of the Lord God, the sum, or the, thou sealest the sum up the sum, full, brimming over of wisdom. So we see that he is a wise being. He is brilliant. And what does he do? If you read back in the first 10 verses, you find that he is the power behind the scene and the wisdom that Tyre thought they had. It caused them to have much wealth. The material things that were coming into those seaports, they thought, look what we've done. When in reality, it was the wisdom of Satan / Lucifer, the king of Tyre, the power behind that throne, that was letting them experience that. He was filled with wisdom to the brim at his creation. And so, when you think about him being the wisest of angels, nobody knows how many angels there are. It is an innumerable host. I don't think that that any human would be able to even calculate this. I can't fathom how much a trillion is. I think that if you were to do a trillion seconds in all of recorded history, there's probably not been maybe a trillion seconds. I mean, that's a lot. But yet these angels in their creation, it's an innumerable host. We know from the sermon this morning, there's 200 million that's going to be released. And that is those that are just waiting and not doing anything. We know this, that only a third of the angels that were in heaven originally created, those are the ones that fell with Satan. So we're talking about a massive, massive number that we don't know. And yet here this says that thou sealest up the sum. In other words, when you're putting all this together, he's the one that's full of wisdom. Now I'm going to come back to the beauty in a moment. And so you've got this being, and it seems as though that he was at the top of the pile. Now, what do we know about angels and their positions? Very quickly, I want you to remember this, that the book of Ephesians tells us that there are hierarchies in the angelic realm. You have principalities, powers, prince of darkness, spiritual wickedness in high places. You read about that in Ephesians 1 and Ephesians 4, all right? So you've got those hierarchies. You also read in Hebrews that they are ministering spirits. What does that mean? That means that they minister the will of God, whatever God needs them to do. We also know that they protect. Psalm 91 talks about that the angels protect people. I personally believe that every Christian has at least two. When he says that he will give the angels to protect thee, an angel is plural, and so I think it's a minimum of two. Some of you might need more than that, but you probably got at least two, all right? Not only do they protect, but they perform miracles. Acts chapter 5, Acts chapter 12, what do? They break open the jailhouse and let God's people get out. So they perform miracles when they need to. Revelation 16, they perform judgment when God needs them to. And all through the book of the Revelation, you find this judgment that comes. And so you have that. But then there's also at least two classes of angels that are different. You have one class that is called a seraphim. You read about them in Ezekiel 1. You have some that have these six wings. They have two that they fly with, two that they cover their face with, two that they cover their feet with. And when you're thinking about a seraphim and a cherubim, the little im at the end of those words means that it's a plural. If it were singular, it would be a seraph or a cherub, all right? Now, I know years ago, we used to have little kids that sang in a choir, and we said, we're going to have the cherub choir sing today. But the truth of the matter is, a cherub is an angel. And I know we think our babies are angels, just like my grandchildren are. But the truth of the matter is, they're sinners. They are sinners, just like yours are. Even though we look at them, and we just think, aren't they just so gorgeous and sweet? Yeah, they are, until they irritate you, all right? And so you've got these cherubs that now are a special class, just like the seraphim, you've got the cherubim. Now, I want you to look with me at verse 16, and I want to show you something in verse 16. Look down toward the end. He says, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub. That's important. What was the covering cherub? Well, you got to go all the way back to Exodus. Exodus 25, and if you're taking notes, write this down. We're not going to go back to Exodus, but I'm just telling you. You go back to Exodus, and what you have is you have Moses, and he is describing what he wants to have happen and what needs to happen in the tabernacle, the furniture of the tabernacle, and he describes the mercy seat, and they build that mercy seat, and what hangs over that mercy seat but two cherubs that cover that mercy seat. So you have Satan, Lucifer, the devil. All of those names mean various things. Lucifer has the one that's the shining one or the bright one. And so that's a name we look at it and we think, ooh, that's rough. But in reality, in these ancient times, Lucifer was a beautiful name. And so you've got these covering cherubs. That was the job that Lucifer had when he was created. He was a covering cherub. That meant that he was as close to the presence of God as any being could be. He had one job, to magnify the glory of God. He was not God, but yet he was the one that was most created with his qualities to magnify God, but yet he fell. So we have him, he was the wisest, he was a covering cherub, he was someone that should have known better. And I say someone, he is a person. You don't have to be human like we are to just be a person. God is a person. The Holy Spirit is a person. Angels could be called people, even though they're in a different realm than we are. So when I say person, I'm talking about personalities, all right? And so, not only was he created, but third thing, he is beautiful. I want you to go with me back to verse 12. He is perfect in beauty. There was never an angel that was more beautiful than he was. Let that sink in for a moment. You think about the most beautiful person that you can think of. Now, I don't know what your idea of beauty is. I know that whenever Debbie and I first got married, and you know, through the 80s, I know that one of the hunks that all the ladies used to like was Tom Selleck. Okay? I mean, you know, he was Magnum P.I. You know, he was Quigley Down Under. I mean, tall, head full of hair, big old mustache, handsome as he could be. You know, probably 6'3", 6'4". And all the women just like, ooh, man, he is good looking. But if he were to stand next to Lucifer, the comparison would have been crazy. It would have been, that is one ugly man compared to Lucifer. And so you've got him. He is full and perfect in beauty. Now, it goes on to say in verse 13, it begins to give some of these, coverings the way that he had. Now, I'm just giving you what the Bible says. I cannot truly fathom and give you a dogmatic, without reservation, understanding of how he was decorated with these things. I cannot do it. I've thought about it, but I'm going to read it, and I'm going to let the Bible speak for itself. Now, I'm going to give you a description about what some of these things are. We know they're jewels, and I will give you the colors that they are. And so I want you to think about things like sardis, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, emerald, carbuncle, gold, and then I'm going to come to the tabrets and the pipes in a moment. But you have all of those jewels that are there. Old preacher from years gone by, he told the story about when he was pastoring in Philadelphia. He said, I pastored a small church outside of Philadelphia. And he said, one of the people that was in my congregation was a man that was a jeweler. And he said, I would go by and I would see him from time to time. And he said, one day I went by and he said, preacher, I want to show you something. He went to the back, he came back, and he had a little like cloth sack. He opened the top of it up and he said, put your hand out. Now this is probably in the 50s, all right? He poured it out and there was one huge diamond. And he said, this diamond is worth $500,000. Have you ever had a diamond worth that in your hand? And the preacher said, well, no, I haven't. And he said, but I was looking at that diamond, and really, to be honest with you, so there was not much to it. And he said, it was as though the man in the church said, I think I know what you're thinking. You're not really seeing anything. So he took the diamond back and he said, I want to do something. He reached under the counter. He took a black velvet cloth and he laid the cloth out and he took that $500,000 diamond and he set it on that. And all of a sudden, with that background, it began to just go crazy. And he saw it in a totally different light. That's what we see when it comes to Satan. He was created with all of these things in him. And what was he supposed to do? He was supposed to reflect the glory of God in a more grandeur way than any other being that had ever been created. That's what he was supposed to do. And yet, he did not do that. But he was supposed to reflect the glory of God. But instead, he began to think, hey, I'm special. I want you to look with me at the latter part of verse 13. The workmanship of thy tabrets. The word tabret is an old English word. We would say tambourine. All right? So, the workmanship of thy tambourines and of thy pipes was prepared in thee, not for thee, in thee, in the day that thou wast created. So in other words, the day that God created him, he had built-in musical ability. Now, Brother Keith is an accomplished musician, singer. I agree with Brother Don. Brother Don told me, said, I'm telling you right now, Brother Keith is one of the finest, if not the finest, choir director I've ever seen. I love his voice and the way that he can sing. I love it when he gets over there and starts plunking on the piano. I love the way that that Lisa plays the piano. She is energetic. I remember years ago, Brother Gene Hudgens, he lives over in South Carolina now, But he told me before he moved over to South Carolina, he said, I'll tell you right now, he said, I like hearing that girl on that piano play. He said, she enjoys it. And I said, I think you're right. I think she does. But can I tell you, they didn't wake up on their birthday and go, I can do it. You know what it took? It took hours and hours and hours and hours of practice and training and practice and instruction and practice over and over and over. There was a great musician one time, and somebody said, I would give the world if I could play like you do. He said, that's exactly what it cost. You got to give up everything if you're going to play like this. Well, he had musical ability. I know this. I know that I hear songs and I think, man, that's great. Tammy singing tonight. Song I've never heard before. My heart was blessed by that. But you know what that was for me? I looked at that and I saw those words and I'm thinking, she didn't come up with that 2 hours ago. She's had that song somewhere. She has sung that before. She has practiced that before. She had to learn that song Lucifer was not like that. He was created and he had it. He didn't have to learn the doxology. He was born with it. He is a musical being. Is it any wonder that he uses music to reach the masses today? I know this. I know that you can have concerts and there are people that'll pay over $1,000 a ticket to go to a musical concert. I think that's nuts. But then again, I'm not a music guy. But I will let you in on this. I wouldn't pay $1,000 to go hear a preacher. Because if he charged $1,000, he's a hireling, and so I'm not going to see him. But I know there's times when it has been worth $1,000 for some of the things that I have heard in those messages. And I know this. I know that emotions can be stirred by the music. I also know this. I know that their contemporary churches and their whole ministries are built on their music. We had a family in the church that had been on vacation and they stopped at a church somewhere in Tennessee and they went to a church. You know what they were giving out at the front door? Earplugs. Earplugs. And my first thought was, we don't give out earplugs, we give out hearing aids. That was what my first thought was. And so you've got him and he was musically created. He was able to do it with music in his heart. Let me share one other thing here before I get to the close. Look back at verse 13. We're there already. I want to give you a little something for you to chew on. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. That is not Eden in Genesis 2. I want that to sink in for a moment. When he was created in the garden of God, not the garden of man. Now, do you remember me referencing this just a few minutes ago about Moses and how that he had a certain set of instructions that were patterned after the tabernacle in heaven, according to Hebrews? Now what you have is you've got the Garden of Eden on earth in Genesis 2 that is patterned after the Garden of God in heaven. And it's the Garden of God which is where Lucifer did his early work. And so you have this being that was created, wise, beautiful, musical. All of these things that we see in these verses this evening. But yet, he fell. He fell. I want you to look with me now at verse, let's start in verse 16. By the multitude of thy merchandise. The word merchandise has the idea of your success monetarily. Remember, there's a comparison between the king of Tyre and how well they were doing financially with now the power behind it. By the many wise things that you have done to make money, to make wealth, they have filled the midst of thee with violence. You know, people will do horrible, horrible things for money. Thou hast sinned. Therefore, I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God. I will destroy thee. And then he says, O covering cherub. In other words, I am going to cast you out. You were the special one. Nobody ever had a place that was higher than you. You were as close to my glory as any being had ever been. You were created with all of these jewels inside of you to give me glory. And yet you did not. Because you thought that you should have been the one to receive that. You consider yourself to be God. And we're not going to turn to it tonight. Maybe we'll get to it in the next week or two. But Isaiah has some things to say about that. And he says, "So I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire." Now, the stones of fire there, that is probably a reference to the seraphim, where it talks about the shining ones, the bright ones. We would think of the lightning flashes. That's what we would think of, all right? And so his pride caused him to fall. The beauty that he had caused it. Look at verse 17, the first part. "Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty." He was so handsome. He was looked upon by all the other angels, and they would say, "Wow, he is gorgeous. Look how the glory of God reflects in those jewels." And yet, because of that creation that God had made him so gorgeous, he thought he was special. I don't know if you remember years ago, back in the 90s, there was a lady that was the governor of Texas. Her name was Ann Richards. They used to call her Ma Richards. And she was debating George H.W. Bush one time. And she said, "Poor, poor George. He was born on third base and he thinks he hit a triple." That is what Lucifer thinks. He thought that he had done all of this himself, when in reality, it was God that gave him everything that he could have ever desired. There was none in the created realm greater than he was. There was none in the created realm wiser than he was. There was none in the created realm that were more beautiful than he was. There was none that could do music, sing, or play more than he could. But yet, because of all of that beauty, and because of all that musical ability, and because of all of that wisdom that God had imbued him with, he was lifted up with pride. And what did God do? He says, "I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold thee." In other words, he was the guy that was the power behind the throne in Tyre. But yet, there will be a day when he will be taken and he will be cast into the lake of fire that burns with brimstone. And the picture here is a defeated foe, and people are walking by and sneering. Look at that. He thought he was something. He's nothing. But yet he had it all at one time, but because of his pride, he was cast down. Do I think that he still has that pride? Oh, I absolutely do. I think that the Lord cast him out of heaven. I think a third of the angels went with him, but he is still hoping against hope that he can somehow dethrone God and become God.